All right, welcome to class today. I hope you all had yourselves an enjoyable couple of days. We did grade the Module 2 Paper 1, had a lower average than we had seen in the past. We'll sort of talk about that and so forth, may make some adjustments into the future, but there's also, of course, makeup opportunities and so forth, and many of you did well. So I'm happy to take any questions about that if there are any. I also need to talk about a little bit of sort of administrative material. In particular, I've added, due to requests from some students, I've added a auto captioning system, which you'll see a little icon in the top left corner of your Zoom. I would encourage you to only use that if you need to see captions, as it will likely distract from what else is going on, but it is there if you need it. And if you were one of the people that requested that, I may be following up and sort of seeing if this is working for you. Before we get to the material for the day, any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, other things I should address? Okay. Then, let's talk about what we're going to cover today. So, our topic for the day, our primary topic for... Oh, wrong button. Our primary topic for the day here is going to be more about translating into English. And back again. So we started talking about this on Monday. We talked some about this idea of finding the main operator and using some templates. And my plan today is basically just go through a lot of examples. There are more examples on the review page. There are more examples in our textbook. There will be plenty you can work with on that. I'm not sure we've finalized pulling together the review. But if you go to the practice page, yes, so we do have M22 all here, right, which is just a lot of different examples. I'm actually going to talk about a couple of these from this page, but there's plenty here, and I will also add at some point, I don't believe I have added yet, there's another like 50-some-odd examples from the For All X textbook that we'll talk about. I should comment that these are all from past semesters, okay? And in the past semesters, we taught sets after quantifiers. You'll notice none of the quantifiers here say what set they're coming from. So we'll talk a little bit about how that adjusts things today, but for the most part, this should just work as is. So we'll sort of walk through this, and we're actually going to start with talking a little bit about R and how that works in some of these sentences as we're diving in. So, let me, okay, let's look just at these first two questions. Maybe we actually do questions two and three, because I think that may go slightly smoother than questions one and two. Each of these are the form of what's called a syllogism in the ancient Greek discussion of different ways of handling logic. They came up with these ideas of sort of short trios of sentences, two of which lead to the third. We're not super interested in that, although that does where, like, Clarent and Barbara and so on, these are the old names for them. What I'm more interested in is how we translate individual phrases like some H is G. Let's start here. When I see something, that suggests it exists. And when I say some H, there's two basic ways we could go. We could say something in H if H is a set, and then I could assume that G is a predicate. Okay? But we actually don't need to do this with sets. H could be a predicate as well. We could also say there exists an X in some undefined set, the universe of discourse, or the domain of what we're talking about, where we have something about it being H and something about it being G. If we think in this form, and we'll actually talk about how these two can be translated into each other here in a moment, but if we think about it in this form, the big question we have is what goes here? Some H is G. Okay? And we also have this phrase. Before I fill that in, let's talk about a parallel phrase. All H are G. I would expect this. I could write it as everything that's an H is also a G. But if I write it without the set, if I write it assuming this is a predicate instead, Then again, I'm going to need an operator in between. Connective to connect them. One of the surprising things to many people as they're learning logic is that I need different operators for these two situations. And to understand why, let's try to think about what's going on here. If I want to find something that is both H and G, both happy and glad, let's pretend that's what H and G mean, right? Something is happy, something that is happy is also glad. Saying something that is happy is also glad is saying it's the same thing as saying something is happy and glad. I need one thing to be both happy and glad. So I need an and here for the is or are in this context. But in this other context, I'm trying to make a claim only about those things that are H. I'm saying that everything that is happy is also glad. I'm making no claims about the unhappy things. And so the right way of handling that is I want something that only has any emphasis if H was true. So I want an arrow, an implication instead. And this leads to a general rule as well as a way of thinking about things. The rule is universal quantifiers get arrows, existential get conjunctions. And this almost always applies. If all you do is remember this rule, you will usually get things right. And so this is a fine way to go, is just remember the rule. Or you can also think about how I am trying to make claims, right? Can I reword this in a more English, in a more logic-like English first before turning it into English? So sometimes I just try the rule, but sometimes I'm going to try to rewrite this using the English forms of the connective. So how would I say all H are G? I would say all things, if they're H, are also G. I don't want to say that all things are H and G, because I'm not claiming that everything's an H. I'm just making it an if. There's an implication implicit in this R. Whereas if I try to do that same thing here, I say something is, and here I'm not saying it's an if. Because we only had to have the if true for something, then I can find anything for which H does not apply, and the if would be true. So something is both H and G, is how I would turn that into English. And doing these sort of intermediate steps, making sure you can do this either as a forward direction, trying to rewrite the English using ifs and buts and ands and ors and so forth, or you can try your symbols and check to translate your symbols back into a verbose English and see if it means the same thing. But these can be useful techniques to help you understand what is going on in this translation process. Please. Yeah, so it turns out we didn't need to introduce both symbols. We could have said only for all is a thing, and with the appropriate set of nots, given it to create exists. So you can always swap back and forth. Remember, though, when you swap back and forth, right? If I wanted to rewrite, say, let's suppose I wanted to rewrite this using for all, what is the universal claim that would go with this exists, right? Sorry? Okay. So this is close. You're on the right idea, right? When we get an exists, when we turn to a for all, we need a not. But I also need to negate this whole statement, and this is not the negation of that whole statement. Right? So saying this implication doesn't hold for everything, the challenge we have with implications is they're true if their antecedent is false. And I don't want that to be the way that I satisfy this for some x's. So what I'd really want to do is I want to negate in front and negate here. And then I could use De Morgan's law if I wanted. So I could then turn that into not for all x, not h of x, or not g of x. Which does turn into an implication, but it has an extra not, right? So this is not for all x, h of x implies not g of x. So, yes, we can convert them back and forth. There are multiple ways of writing this, because we can swap them. But it can be tricky. The more knots you have, the easier it is to get lost and forget one. It's just sort of a general, it gets harder to check your work effectively. Other questions? Yes. Let's try a simpler version. If I say, everyone is happy, and I want to word this instead of being a universal every claim, I want to make it an existential there is something claim. So there is not someone unhappy. If everyone is happy, there is not someone who is unhappy. Note here, I've negated the whole statement and the claim I'm making about them. Do you want me to say more? You're welcome. Other questions? Okay. So, this gets across several points that we didn't talk about on Monday. Monday we talked about this idea of main operators and following some sort of formula to make things work. And that works pretty nicely in many cases. But we also need to realize that there are even very common words that translate in different ways in different contexts. Like is or are will be an implication of its universal, a conjunction of its existential. And we have this idea that the same expression may be representable in multiple ways. And the more complicated the idea we're expressing becomes, the more of these and the more different these will start to look as we have more and more ways of expressing the same set of constraints. So even in something that sounds as simple as turn the English to logic, we're still going to have multiple ways we could end up. And even more multiple ways going the other way, because English is inherently full of ambiguities and multiple expressions and so forth. And so the plan for today is we're just going to try to walk through a lot of examples of this. I tried to teach you the rules that I know about, and to my best of my knowledge, the next thing to do is give examples. So I have a lot of examples. I have some of them pre-written. I have others that I have on backup. I welcome, invite questions, comments, how would you do this other thing? I would love to know where you would like to see me go, because there's lots of places I could go, and I don't really have new ideas I'm trying to cover. I'm just trying to show how these ideas work in multiple settings so you'll feel more comfortable applying them in different circumstances. So, let's talk about this scenario. I created a whole bunch of statements, some in logic, some in English, and we're going to try to walk through them. I've typed them out because, I don't know, it made it easier for me. We may sometimes draw as well if it's useful to draw sets or so on, or I'm getting tired of typing symbols. I've pre-created several different things up at the top here. I have a set of people, a set of sections, which are themselves sets of people. So this is a set of people. I have somebody is unhappy, somebody is in something, they're enrolled in this section, somebody likes something, and then I have two symbols that just have a single meaning. I have a symbol for me, because I am the most important person in my own mind, and a symbol for this section, because it is the most important section in my mind, right? And we're going to try to sort of see how we can use these pieces to express various ideas. So, I'll do a couple of these, and then I'll give you a little bit of time to work on them on your own to see if these result in questions. And I suppose if you want to move ahead, I have a lot of them written down here. We can do that. But let me just start with this very first one. I start with the very first one because it is a quantifier with an element of... Oh, and I said I was going to say something about that earlier. Hold on. I left out something in my planning. Let me go back. I mentioned that I was going to show how we could show these two things are the same, and I just didn't. So let me do that. How are these two things the same? Okay. Anytime we have exists x element of h such that blah. That is the same as saying there exists an x such that x is an element of h and blah. These are equivalent statements in every way. And in some disciplines, like formal logic, they'll typically be written in the second way. In other disciplines, like computing, they'll typically be written in this first way. They are just entirely equivalent. It is also the case, if we think back to set builder notation, back from when we were talking about sets, we mentioned this idea that I can write a set using set builder notation. And I can turn any single argument predicate into a set of the things that satisfy that predicate very easily. Just by saying the set of things that satisfy the predicate. And this is so easy to do this, and it's also so easy to write the predicate, right? So I could also make some predicate whose definition is that X is an element of H. Right, moving back and forth between these two is so easy that sometimes, as sort of a sloppiness or a shorthand, people will treat single argument predicates as if they were sets, and sets as if they were single argument predicates. We're not going to do that in this class, but you will see it in the future, so I thought it was worth mentioning this ability to go back and forth. And whether we define something as a single argument predicate or as a set is sort of a modeling decision. We could have gone either way. I will tell you which one to do so that we don't have this ambiguity when we give you assignments. Questions about this before I go back to my examples? H dash? You mean this prime here? Sorry, I just wanted to show it's a different H than this H. This is a set, and this is a predicate. And I just needed a different symbol. I could have also done H sub 2. I could have also done... I don't know, I could have done Q, it doesn't matter what. Other questions? Random aside. You'll notice that the question was about a dash, and I said, do you mean the prime? We have so many names for short lines in math and computing. I'm sorry, there's so many terms to learn. We'll try not to make those get in your way to the degree possible. Okay. So, let's take just these first two statements. We'll come back to the others later. This first one is designed to be fairly simple. It's just saying every X that is in P is H. So I would just say everyone is happy. Now, I just said everyone is happy because I can sort of hold that whole logic in my head at one time. But that's a skill that gets developed over time. And so, if this was logic more than I could hold in my head the whole time, I would start by translating it literally. I would say, every X in the set of people, I may even say for every X in the set of people, X is happy. Trying to literally turn what I see written here into words. If I were to say this statement to somebody on the street, or one of you in class, or so on, you would be confused by the complexity of my statement for a simple idea, right? And so we would then want to simplify this. One thing we'll often do to simplify is try to remove variables. Okay? If we have only one variable of a single type, we can use the. So I can say, for everything in the set of people, the person is happy. Or I can say for every person is typically how we'll do this. I can say the person or that person. Notice actually makes it longer in words, longer to say, longer to write, but easier for humans to understand because variables are not how humans usually communicate. Okay? And then every person in the set people, that's redundant. If you're a person, you're in the set of people. So I'm going to just say, for every person, that person is happy. And then I can say, I don't really need the for and that, I don't need to repeat person, so I can say, every person is happy. And then I could stop there, or I could limit it down to everyone is happy if I think everyone only talks about persons. And particularly when you're starting out, I encourage going through these steps. Even if you want to jump directly to the end, I would encourage doing at least one of these others and making sure they agree. Questions about this one? All right, let's go the other direction. When I have English, and we haven't really done many examples in this direction yet, so let's go a little bit more slowly here. When I have English, I want to know what is sort of the main operator. What is the thing that applies to all of the sentence? And I'm going to argue here, every is the thing that applies to the whole sentence. The meaning of the rest of the sentence is dependent on the idea that I'm talking about everyone instead of a specific one or a subset of people. And so I'm going to expect to see a for all as that outermost thing. When I'm creating a for all, I'm going to need a variable. And I can pick any variable I want, but I'm going to just pick x. Right? The variable name was arbitrary. I'll pick x for simplicity. And I should always, in computing, we like to know what sets everything comes from. Although, again, many of the examples in the for all x textbook and our practice won't do that, and so we won't be particularly pedantic about that in this coming quiz. But I do want to know what I think the right set is for the thing that's being universally quantified over. And when I say one in this section, right, who are in what are ones in sections? Both every one suggests people in most cases, and I know that people are the things in sections, so I'm going to suggest this is probably a P. It doesn't have to be a P, okay? And I could say, ooh, I have an in. Maybe it's talking about this section. So we're actually going to do two ways of this at once, because I have a symbol for this section, S1. And so maybe that's what was meant. I wonder if I know how to type subscripts. Yep. Absolutely. Right. Yes. Pretend I was teaching a course with only one student. I might have the teacher and the student. Right? Yep, absolutely. Any way of writing the set is fine. Other questions? Okay. Well, let's look. We say S1 is defined as this section. But up here I said the set of sections, which are sets of people. So the way I defined my terms, yes, S1 is both a member of S and a set of people. I didn't have to define my terms this way, but that's how I chose to do it. Other questions? I absolutely can. And I'm about to in this second one. Actually, we're going to see two different ways to do it, this one. So, yeah, so I do have this ability to say, okay, if I'm looking at every person, I now need to limit the people. So let's stick with this first one for a bit. I've handled everyone. Great. And now I need to do what remains to be done here. I need to do in this section is happy. So the main operator here is an is. And the way we write is in a for all is with an arrow, implication. So I know I'm going to have something like in this section, I guess in particular x is in this section, implies x is happy. Okay. Where what I've done is identified what was left after taking care of everyone in this section is happy. And if I the main operator is, known that an is with a for all is an arrow, where it would be an and for an exists, and then rewrote the pieces that were left in parentheses so I could see how it all fits together. And now I need to figure out how to write those pieces. X is happy is the easier one because we have a predicate that just means X is happy. Hooray! That makes my life easier. Oh, and guess what? Is enrolled in this section. I just have a predicate that means that, too. Amazing! Although I have another way I could write this, I also have this is in predicate. So I could also say that X is in S1. Would also get across that idea. So either one of these would be fine. They both say the same thing. For every person, if that person is enrolled in this section, then they are happy. Questions about this before we run down the other path? Please. Why, yes, it would! So many ways of doing things! In fact, we never need the I predicate because it's just the member of operator. Yep. I can even go weirder here. It turns out I don't know if I want to go down that route. We'll pause there for a moment. I'll go further if people ask more questions. Other questions about this or other things you'd like me to talk about before I move on to this second half? Yeah, great question. If I am in the position of modeling the world, if I am given generic English and told turn it into logic, I can define my own predicates freely. If instead I am told what the set of predicates are, I have to use the ones that are there. And both of these scenarios exist in the real world. So when I am being asked, for example, to try to write some logical statements about the correctness of a program, sometimes I can write anything I want. The world is my oyster. I can make up my own predicates to describe the things I want to talk about. Other times, I need to write something that can be verified by a computer, and so I have to use the set of predicates that are built into that computer system or the like. And so, other questions? Sorry, say it again. Right. I picked the predicates before we started, so you use these predicates. There's somebody else that spoke as well. Right. Let's think about what this would mean if I used an and. Let's look at this one because I think it's probably the simplest to read. If I had an and here instead, let's try turning that back into English. Ah, why did my... No, my and is not printing. Why is my and not printing? Hold on, let me copy-paste an and from somewhere. Because my and wasn't printing. So if we take this and turn that into an and, what does this say? For every person... They are enrolled in this class, and they are happy. I'm not trying to claim that everyone is enrolled in the class. I am not trying to claim that everyone is happy. But that's what this statement says. So this statement says, everyone... Oh, I didn't mean to caps locks. Okay. Everyone is both in this class, in this section, and is happy. We would use an and if this was an exists, and we'll see some examples of that later, but for alls, is gets translated as an arrow, rather than... for this second one? So let's revisit that after we expand number 29. Any other questions about these before we get on to this other approach we could have used? Okay, let's do this other approach. Let's do the same thing we did before. I need to figure out what part of the sentence I have already covered. I have for all x in S1, where S1 was this section. So I believe I have done everyone in this section. That's already handled. So all I have left is x is happy. And I conveniently have a predicate for x is happy. I don't have an and here. I don't have any connectives here because I have a single predicate to do the job. Also, it turns out I can actually convert between these two by moving things around. We may do that later on. But even when we do, when I talked about this idea... Oh, wrong button. Why is my screen doing fishy things? Okay. We talked about this idea here. Actually, let me get this background. It's distracting. We talked about this idea that an exists means an and. That was only true for exists. Okay? If that was a for all x element of H law, that would be the same thing as for all x. X is an element of H implies blah. Okay, so we have this difference in the operators, even in the meaning of our quantifiers. It's built right into what we mean by this member of set part. So however it is, even if we use this rule to try to create operators, we'd still end up with implications, not ands, if we started with a for. Other questions? Okay. Let's see how things go. So, I have several more examples. What I would like you to do is try working out a few of these. Start with the first one. I'm going to give you, let's say, 4 minutes to work on these. If you have questions along the way, feel free to pop them in chat. I'm going to try to not interrupt what other people are doing to answer questions along the way. But once we've had a few minutes to look at them, I'll try to take questions and see where we stand. Questions about what I want you to do for the next 4 minutes. Okay, have at it. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, sorry, I changed my mind about the symbols halfway through. I'll fix it. Okay. I realize that was not enough time to do them all. Hopefully there's enough time to look at least the first two for most of you, and if not, we'll talk about them now. Questions about the first one. All right, if we aren't having questions, then I'm guessing that when I put up the answer, you all go, uh-huh, that's what I thought. If not, please ask more questions. This, I believe, is the answer. Questions now. Great. Questions about the second one. This is, I believe, one of several ways of wording the answer. Questions now. Yeah. Great question. Okay. So there is someone who is both in this class and is happy. This is a very direct, we've removed the variable, but otherwise it's a very direct, we have there is someone who is both in, right? This is a very direct translation of English. This is correct. Ideally, I would want it more simplified than this, because I like succinct English. When we're first starting out this, we probably aren't going to be super nitpicky about reducing it. But in general, try to look for places where you can make it shorter. So this is okay. I think this is more elegant. And this comes to part of the challenge we have in general, that elegance and style is part of what we're doing. And that is not easily taught. So we're going to try to be fairly open about this, but I'd encourage you, particularly if you find your English appears to just contain every construction in there, look for a way to make it a little bit shorter, would be my goal. Does that help? You're welcome. Other questions? All right, let's look at these next two. I have not everyone... Not everyone is happy. It's a direct translation. Not everyone is happy. And then we also have here someone. Forgot to put sets down here. I should do that. Let me get there. Okay. Someone is unhappy. Now, unhappy, here we have a limitation of our math. You are probably aware, depending on exactly how you think of these words, that it's possible to be neither happy nor unhappy. I can just be bored, or mildly pleased. I'm not really happy, I'm not really unhappy, I'm just here. Because we're modeling happiness as a predicate, it's an all-or-nothing thing. You're either happy or you're unhappy, and there is no middle ground when we're dealing with logic. And so a limitation of the way we are modeling our logic is that we have not given ourselves room to have a neither happy nor unhappy unless we were to add another predicate, an unhappy predicate. Okay? So given the limitations we have with the predicates we have, I believe here is where we would be. Questions about these translations, please. That is true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, so this brings up another nuance, right? These are completely logically expression statements. They're actually logically equivalent English, assuming that happiness is an all-or-nothing thing, and there's no halfway in between. And so, logically, we could do either one. However, just as in English I can word it in different ways, in logic there's sort of the corresponding different way. And so I just said, hey, if you write out all of the logical symbols, try to make it shorter. But there's also this competing force that says try to make it look like it was expressed. And these are often in conflict. So This, again, gets to this sort of art of expression. Can I make something succinct that looks like what people said? Incidentally, this expressing things formally in ways that match how people say them informally is a big part of software engineering. Although it's unlikely you'll be told this explicitly in those classes very soon until you get along the way. But a lot of software engineering is based on the idea that if I can make my code resemble how my client is going to request new features, then it will be easier to add those features than if my code doesn't look like it. And that's also going to be true about our logic. The more similar my logic looks to how people are thinking, the easier it will be to solve, and the simpler it is, the easier it will be to solve. And so we have these trying to get it simple, but not so simple it gets unlike what people are thinking. Challenge in this process. Does this help? I'm not sure I actually answered the real question, which is it okay to write one where you meant the other? If they're logically equivalent, yes. But again, there's a sort of second-order goal of trying to make them fit the structure. Right. We are getting into how we express ourselves, and there's always nuance of expression. And there are also styles. So there probably are faculty in our department that would say, you should always push the knot as far in as you can, or pull the knot all the way out, or something like that. Instead of, you should try to match the English. Right? This is a matter of style. So, for grading, if it's logically equivalent, we're good. All right. Only one person is happy. This one is messier than all of the ones before. And they'll get even more messy as we go down. We'll see how far we get today. Only one. We don't have an only one operator. We have there is at least someone, and we have there is everyone. But we don't have an only one. How can I turn only one into logic using the logical connectives on operators that I have available? I would suggest when you get some English that you can't directly translate, because this outermost operator is too complicated, see if you can rewrite the English in a more verbose form that does use things we can handle. So when I think about only one, this seems like it has two parts. There is at least one who is one person who is happy. And there is no one other than that person who is happy. There are other ways we could handle only one person, but I think this is the idea. Okay? And you are welcome to word this idea in other ways, but see if you can break it apart into little pieces. One way of thinking about this is pick something that's sort of close. So, only one is sort of more like there exists something than not. So I'm going to start with an exists-like statement. There's at least one. And then I'm going to ask myself, what did I fail to capture with this approximation? I failed to capture the idea that there is no one other than that person who is happy. And if I take sort of this general statement and clarify it, and then if I'm still missing something, clarify it again, I may end up with a lot more words, but I'll end up with words that are much easier to translate into logic. Now, I have a challenge in turning this into logic because I need to identify the main operator. And I have indented in a way that suggests it's the main operator, but note that I have a person on both sides of the AND. The same person on both sides of the AND. So my main operator needs to... I need to introduce the person before I... at a sort of an outer scope at a more main operator than I do the ANDing. And the way I'm introducing this person, because the way I've sort of defined my person is there's at least one, so I'm going to say there exists a person. Is going to be my main operator. So there's at least one person. Okay, and then I need to say, all right, what is left? Now I have X is happy, and there is no one other than X who is happy. Questions, all right. Now I need my main operator. I have this and. The things on the left side of the and stay on the left. The things on the right side of the and stay on the right. I believe the and is my main operator. It's a thing whose scope is the whole sentence. And so I'm going to turn that and into an and. And then for each of these, I need to translate them. This first one, that's easy. We just have a predicate for that. The second one has multiple things going on. And so again, I need to identify what's the main operator. What's the thing that's applying to the whole statement? And I believe it's there is no one. It's the thing that's sort of applying to the whole statement. Because if I look anywhere else, the is happy requires that person. The other than X, it has to be that person who is other than X. And so I'm going to need that sort of there is no one to be the outermost thing. And we do have a symbol for there is no one, the not exists, which I don't believe I have ready to copy anywhere on my paper. So maybe we'll write it out the long way. I'm just making sure I did. All right, so I'm going to take this and I'm going to say there does not exist another person. Let me copy that up here. Does not exist a person, but I'm going to need a different person. I'm going to make a different variable. So there is no one. And then I say other than X who is happy. That other than X is also a bit tricky. What do I mean by saying other than X? I mean Y is not the same as X. So I have this idea that Y and X are not the same thing. But that really wasn't the main operator. I have these two statements next to each other with no connective. So if I wanted to try to turn this into English, I'd say Y is other than X and Y is happy. This is implied and conjunction. And so as I finish this up, I would end up having... Sorry, I'm going a minute over. I will stop here almost immediately. Arriving at this statement here. Messier, more complicated, but I can get it one step at a time. This took some time. The more examples you do, the faster it will become. So we have some examples you can practice on. We'll try to post even more such examples. And again, we're sort of trying to see if you're getting the basics of it this week. We'll talk some more about this in days to come. I thank you all for your time. I have taken you a couple of minutes over, which I try not to do. I apologize for that. I will look forward to seeing you on...